The latest report on drug trends in Australia is showing an increase in the frequency of use of what might be termed party drugs by young people. Drugs like cocaine and ecstasy and methamphetamines. So why the increase? What are the likely health impacts of these trends? And if you have young people in your life, how much do you need to worry if they're taking drugs like these at parties and festivals? Professor Michael Farrell is the director of the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre at the University of New South Wales that's done this report. Michael, thank you for joining us in Life Matters.
You're welcome.
Where does the data on this drug use come from, Michael? Given they're illicit drugs, how have you compiled it?
We have compiled this type of survey work every year for the last nearly 15 years, in which we interview about 1,000 people who are clearly identified as ecstasy users across Australia. And we are looking at changing patterns of behaviour, issues of price, purity and access to these drugs. And this is to complement the National Household Survey that occurs once every 3 years, which gives us a general population picture. And what we do with this survey is we drill down into people who are more involved with this behaviour so that we can get a more granular picture of what's happening and what are the trends. It's a convenient sample and we need to match it up with other information. And it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together where different bits of information form the totality of the picture.
Right. Well, now, one of the increases in use is with cocaine. Can you tell us by how much and why?
The report among these people who are a bit drug involved are that we've seen increasing reported rates of cocaine use, very significant, but the episodes of use are actually quite small. So it's a trend that we need to be looking at carefully. What we have seen internationally, we've seen a similar pattern, but slightly worse in the UK, where we've seen both increase in cocaine consumption, but also increase in cocaine-related deaths, which we haven't seen here yet. What we think it's related to is that the production of cocaine in places like Colombia has gone up. There's also an indication that the amount of cocaine use in the United States has gone down a bit. There's been a lot of other drug problems there recently. And that so the markets have been diverted to and concentrated in places like Europe and Australia. And it is also the interesting thing about cocaine is it's a slightly different market than the pointy end of the drug market. It's sort of, as Robin Williams says about cocaine, he said, it's God's way of telling you you've too much money. It's a very expensive drug.
Yes, well, I mean, that's right. I mean, cocaine has a reputation as an expensive and sort of glamorous drug. I mean, that was part of the appeal when it was big as a party drug back in the 1980s.
And the 70s.
Yes, you know, high-flying corporate types would cut it with their gold Amex card.
Exactly.
Is it surprising that young people today are finding the money to spend on cocaine, or has the cost come down?
Well, the number of episodes of use is really reasonably modest, so that actually you can afford a bit of a splurge from time to time as compared to if you're doing it all the time. But of course, what we do know is if people are doing something, the more people are doing a modest amount of something, there'll always be the tail end of people who are actually getting into significant trouble with these things. So that's always the concern. We tend to try to focus on the harms and figuring out ways, if possible, to reduce the harms related to this. And I think the cocaine is like the ecstasy and also like the methamphetamine or amphetamine. They're stimulant drugs. They're drugs that elevate in the immediate effect is they elevate mood, a bit of euphoria, talkativeness, and you're all out there, you're staying awake, even though the difference between cocaine and the amphetamines is that cocaine is much more short-acting and it's it's a lot more Moorish from that point of view. So you've taken it a short while later, you want to take it again to get the same effect.
Hmm. Well, another thing the report highlights is an increase in the purity of ecstasy and methamphetamines. Can you explain that further?
So what we saw a number of years ago was a drop off in the purity of ecstasy. And actually, the interesting thing is it was dropping off as amphetamine, methamphetamine was taking off, and users were reporting getting less effect from ecstasy at the time. Now, we know that that was related to some of the countermeasures at the at the international level, where some of the precursors for making ecstasy had been effectively blocked, so the production process was interfered with, and clearly what then happens is the producers find ways around it and find ways to do it in different ways, where they need different precursors or that sort of thing. And what we've gradually seen is the purity of ecstasy rising. And so what we do is we ask people, well, what did you think the purity was? Did you think it was low, medium, or high? And so that's dependent on self-report. But what we then do is we look at the information around the seizures and the analysis of the seizures to see how the information we're getting matches with the information from border control and police and that sort of stuff. And that is also reporting increased purity. Mm. And that also is one of the things that then makes ecstasy more attractive, because it's more pure. And the interesting question then is, well, are there harms attached to that? And so why should we be concerned? Is it just that people are getting a purer substance, and therefore the concern is that with the purer ecstasy, is particularly if the purity goes up quite high, particularly if people have been used of sort of less pure and they're taking two or three tablets to get an effect, and suddenly you've got high purity and you're taking two or three of those tablets, you're potentially going into the toxicity end of things. Now, what's the toxicity end of things? It could be where you simply have you're completely agitated and it's a very unpleasant effect. And of course, that isn't good, but it's not life threatening. The concern is that the overdose and some of the ecstasy related deaths may be related to high purity, but it's not an uncomplicated issue, because sometimes with the ecstasy related deaths, you get what's called hyperthermia. And you can get fits and that sort of stuff. And some of those reactions may be what we call idiosyncratic reactions, but we also think that they are also possibly related to high concentrations of MDMA.
Mm. Another party drug on the rise, I think, is ketamine. 30% of the young people surveyed in this group you were talking about say they've used it. Why are they taking this? Isn't it a horse tranquilizer?
Yes. So now you have just be careful from the point of view that the sample we have looked at are not a sample of ordinary teenagers. They're people who are a bit drug involved, so we need to be careful how we extrapolate it to the whole population. Mm. But there tends to be a connection across the way. But with ketamine, ketamine is as you say, it's used as a painkiller in certain settings, particularly in acute trauma settings, and particularly in war zone settings. And it has a very peculiar effect, because if you take ketamine in reasonably sort of mind-changing doses, they talk about going into what's called a K-hole, and you're sitting there and you can hardly move, you're a bit catatonic and you're looking around and life is passing you by. Now, why anybody would want to do that is a good question. It's not one I fully understand, but it's clearly one of those things. It goes in fads and fashions, and it's I know in the UK it's been a problem for quite a while, and one of the complications you get with people who are regular taking ketamine, and it's a reasonably rare but pretty bad complication, is you get people who actually get severe bladder damage because they're so sort of, in a sense, catatonic that they don't empty their bladder, and they get bladder distension, and the ketamine itself is actually removing the pain, and so they can end up needing a significant surgery on their bladder. So that's a pretty extreme complication, but it does tell you something about how strange a drug it is.
Here in Life Matters, the current use of so-called recreation drugs by young people in Australia is our subject. And what's been your approach talking to teenagers and young adults about drugs? You can, if you'd like, tell us how you've handled it. Don't do drugs, just say no. Does that work? You can comment on Facebook or on the SMS 0418 226 576. One listener, Miriam, has been in touch with us with her concerns for the health and well-being of young people in her life. She says they've mentioned that they take what they call Keta, MD and CB, but assure her there's nothing to worry about. So let's try and address that further with Professor Michael Farrell, the Director of the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre. Michael, you've talked about some of the sort of physical dangers and effects of some of these kinds of drugs. What about as far as mental health goes? I mean, is increasing drug use a sign of someone who may be masking mental health problems?
Well, I think it's, I think to begin with, it's easier to think that if you take a certain amount of, particularly a stimulant, if you take it on a not infrequent basis, it is playing with your mood system in a significant way. You're getting elevated mood when you take the drug, and when you're coming down off it, you're getting low mood. And we know the reason for that is because the way these drugs work is they work to release chemicals into the synaptic cleft in the brain, in the where that increases mood. And then what actually happens is, after you've come off the drug, you have a depletion of those same drugs, the catecholamines that actually balance the mood. So if you're doing it on a long-term basis, one of the things we see with the interviews with people who are regular users, we see a significant amount of mental health problems around mood problems and sort of some suicidal ideation and that type of thing, you know. So, and of course, with some of the stronger stimulants, you can also get paranoia and potentially psychosis. So there's not inconsiderable mental health risks simply from the drug exposure. Now, whether people who are more vulnerable take these, our experience is that there is an association between people with chronic childhood adversity. You know, having a difficult start in life is, and taking these sometimes to try to get rid of feelings. But we tend to be careful about this because they're not very effective in dealing with the feelings. So you don't get rid of the feelings. And we tend to be clear that actually when people talk about this being used as a sort of self-treatment, we want to be clear that it doesn't work as a self-treatment.
But if someone does already have a tendency towards, say, anxiety or depression, is using a drug like ecstasy or cocaine more risky for them?
Well, if you have a family history of mood disorders, or particularly if you have a family history of psychosis, all of these things, they, you know, you're already at higher risk than other people. And if you take these substances, the assumption is that it increases your risk. And particularly if you've got severe family history of mood or bipolar disorder, or a history of severe suicidal ideation, or actual suicide in the family, it's without a doubt an increased risk.
Michael, a question that always comes up is whether softer drugs lead young people to regress to the use of harder drugs. What's the current evidence around this?
So this is a fairly controversial area because it's sort of a model of causal thinking, and the issue we have around it at the moment is that to push back and to look at it and say, you know, that if we look at gateway drugs, that tobacco or cigarettes are probably one of the main gateway drugs, if you want to talk about introducing into multiple substance consumption. And after that comes alcohol, and along with that comes cannabis. Whether they are and exactly how one leads to the other is, you know, quite... there's been a pushback from what you would call the gateway. It's called the gateway theory. And the idea is if you take one illegal drug, you can be involved in another illegal drug. Statistically, it's clear that if you're involved with one illegal drug, you're more likely to be involved with other illegal drugs, which makes sense. It's a bit like hot dinners and getting older. You know, if you're exposed to a market, you're more at risk to being exposed to a broader part of that market. Whether that's actually causal is a much more debatable position.
Mm, yeah. So, look, what should a parent do if their teenage or young adult son or daughter is taking party drugs like ecstasy or cocaine or ketamine or methamphetamines?
Well, as a parent, you know, I can say that this is no easy task, and there is no simple, single way to respond to it. I think kids need to be able to have a conversation with the parents where the parents can present concern around reasonable risks in a manner that is helpful to the child and can influence their decision around engaging in this behaviour, one, if they're under peer pressure, or two, if they're curious and they're risk takers and they want to do this. So, you know, keeping the dialogue open is critical. I think it's not as much talking to as also listening and being able to hear. One of the things is where people are going, who they're mixing with. And I think if people are going to festivals, we know that there's a high range of exposure to some of these drugs at festivals. And you've got to look at it from that context without necessarily needing to confirm with your child that they have or they haven't.
And if, as a parent, you want more information about effective ways to tell your kids don't do drugs, there's a link on the Life Matters website. Professor Michael Farrell is the director of the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre, authors of this latest report on drug use in Australia. You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith and Michael McKenzie.